All right, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone. This is great. I have been a little bit out. I haven't been so present online. I've been traveling this week. It was Gimel Tammuz. I spoke in New York. I spoke somewhere up north over here. Did some traveling here and there, and I'd like to share some. I missed this class that I was going to do. I usually do a Monday night. And some people complained that I didn't do much on Gimel Tammuz, which was this week. I neglected the parsha. I will not speak about the parsha today. I did give a class. Last week's class was really a unintentional, even when I sat down, and it became the Gimel Tammuz class worth listening to. The upside down world of Mashiach, although we didn't even speak about that. But we're going to speak about that in today's class. So what is this class all about? This is a weird title. 7-Eleven, Slurpees, Big Gulp, and the Rebbe. This is going to be an entertaining class. I'm having a little fun. But I think it's very, 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 very important over here. It's important that, we have to train our eyes to see godliness in the most mundane things of life. Things that are just so random and so seem to be so mundane are really so godly. And when God helps that we open our eyes a little bit and get a little glimpse into the inner workings of existence and how things that people produce and make and they have no idea what they're doing are really reflecting the deepest godly thoughts and the deepest Torah ideas. So instead of giving a class on the parsha, I'm giving a class on everyday life. And hopefully we're going to extract such deep, amazing, inspiring ideas. And this is all, of course, based on Torah concepts, but I'm going to see it not in the Torah. We're going to see it in the world. Now, I've given a class years ago. When I say years ago, I mean about 2 years ago. I spoke about this idea. I spoke about 7-Eleven. And so some of you who have been staunch and continuous listeners might remember what I spoke then. So the kernel of it has already came about like 2, 3 years ago when this idea hit me. However, this year, this time around, I have a lot of chidushim, which means I have a lot of new insights into it. And being that that is all new, I'd like to share it today. So really, I'd like to talk about the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, because this is the week of Gimel Tammuz. I also want to speak about the time that we're in right now. It's between Gimel Tammuz and Yud Beis Tammuz, which means it's the week of this greater holiday. Gimel Tammuz is the day the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe came out of jail, but he was sent off to exile, and then on the 12th day of Tammuz, he was freed completely. And so this is like the intermediate days. So that in mind, it's holiday season in terms of flipping the darkness into light. That's really where we're at right now, because Tammuz has always been a very dark month for the Jewish people. The 17th of Tammuz, the beginning of 3 weeks of mourning. But our work is to flip it over, and from the darkness will come the greatest light. And that's what this class will be all about, is the to see the flipping over, the transformation of darkness to light, which is part of the Mashiach process, the Mashiach revelation. So we begin. And today is July 7th. July 7th is 7-Eleven. So everybody, if you haven't done so yet, I did it already. Go by your local 7-Eleven and get yourself a free Slurpee. Today is free Slurpee day. I didn't go take a Slurpee because I don't like Slurpees. Too sweet for me. Way too sweet. But my son ran out and he got himself a Slurpee, and then he actually asked the guy if he could take a second one for his dad. And I didn't want the Slurpee, but I was going to bring it just for props to have the Slurpee here for the class, because my whole class is about Slurpees. So today we have free Slurpees, 7-Eleven. And I know a lot of camps, Jewish camps, take the kids, day camps all over to your local 7-Eleven store, and the kids can get Slurpees. And I see when I was waiting outside for my son to get the Slurpees, I saw a whole bunch of adults going in and getting their Slurpees as well. So what is the significance of this Slurpee Day of 7-Eleven? What does it mean? Does it have any godly significance? Everything has godly significance because there's nothing in the world that's not Hashem. But I did some major research into the company of 7-Eleven, and I found some really, really awesome things that I'd like to share now with you. And all in connection to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the times we're living in right now, Mashiach's energy in the world, and I'll believe it or not, the unification of Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David, it's all connected to 7-Eleven and to Slurpees. So those of you that are very serious people and can only tolerate very serious Torah, I would recommend that you probably shut this channel down. This will be a little light. Although the secrets that we're sharing now is probably worth hearing, even if you're a very serious person. But those of you who don't mind a little bit humorous Torah and don't mind laughing a little bit and getting a kick out of really, really crazy ideas, stay with me today. We're going to have a good time and we're going to have a deep time together. So let's go right at it. As I mentioned many times, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, whose anniversary of 30 years of, as I discussed last week, I see it just as a concealment, has the 30 years we commenced this week. The Rebbe is the seventh Chabad Rebbe in the line of Chabad Chassidus, beginning in with the Alter Rebbe in 17, starting around 17 exactly. I'm not exactly sure. Let's pin it at around 1780 is where Chabad Chassidism began, a little earlier, 1770s. Chabad Chassidism began to flourish. The Hasidic movement started about 1740. So this was the third generation. And consequently, after Reb Shneur Zalman, the author of the Tanya, the studies of Chassidus that we study every week, that we learn his Torah. So right after his passing, his son, the Mittler Rebbe, took over, second Chabad Rebbe. And so the generations of Chabad continued for seven generations. The Rebbe that we're referring to, he is the seventh on the line. And the Rebbe made a very big deal about the fact that he's number seven. It wasn't just, okay, happened to be number seven. He could have been number five. The Rebbe made a very big deal on the first time when he actually accepted his leadership. The Rebbe made a very big deal about the fact that he's number seven. He spoke of seven tzaddikim, seven righteous individuals, seven saintly people that move the world to its final completion for what the world was created for. And he explains how the series of seven is a manner in which the divine meets the creation. The manner in which godliness opens up in the world is through a series of seven tzaddikim, both in the beginning of times with Abraham. It starts with Avram Avinu and then Isaac, Jacob, Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron. The line of the seven tzaddikim then are Avram, Abraham, Isaac, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Jacob. And then we follow the line from Yaakov. We follow Levi, who's the fourth. And then his son is Kahas, who's the fifth. And his son is Amram, Moshe's father. Amram is the sixth. Finally, Moshe is the seventh. And the Rebbe explains over there how these were seven tzaddikim who brought God down into the world. Moses is the one who completes and brings God into the world, both by bringing the Torah and then finally by erecting a Mishkan, setting up a tabernacle, a home for God to live in this world. So completing the purpose of creation. However, we know that that was only a trial run. It wasn't the real deal. It wasn't permanent. It wasn't lasting forever. The great permanence of God residing in the world is going to be in the coming of Mashiach, which is going to bring in an everlasting godly presence in this world and a unification of Hashem in the world. That too is preceded, the Rebbe explained, with seven tzaddikim. So the Rebbe was talking about his own ancestry, beginning with the Alter Rebbe, who begins this process of Hamshachas HaShechina, drawing the Shechina down all the way to the world. So the Alter Rebbe brings God into the first heaven because he brought God into the grasp of the mind. Until the Alter Rebbe, you couldn't grasp godliness in the mind. Chabad Hasidism makes, conditions the mind to be able to experience Hashem. Unbelievable. And those who don't believe me, study some of the Thursday night classes we've given over here and see if the Alter Rebbe is not the one who's able to capture divinity, which has not been able to do so before him. So he starts bringing godliness into the intellect and into the mind, followed by his successor, the Mittler Rebbe, who brings it into the Bina, and so on. It's the second heaven, closer to earth. And then finally, the Rebbe, the seventh Chabad Rebbe, brings God down into this physical world, all the way to earth. Touchdown. He brings Hashem down to the world, down here to the lowest of worlds. And to commemorate that, or rather to illustrate that, I will tell you right now, my son, today, Mazel Tov, he flew to Fairbanks, Alaska, which I share with you many times. He's opening up a Chabad in Fairbanks, Alaska. They converted a church. Thank God, with miracles, he was given to him a gift by a very special person who bought a church. And today, the sign went up. I have it on my phone. I can't share it on my phone with me. The church is no more a church. It has a sign in it. Fairbanks Jewish Center. So talking about earth, most far-flung places of earth, is now being made a place where Torah, Judaism, holiness, God, divine truths are going to flow to the world. All the way in Fairbanks, Alaska, the very, 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 very farthest corner of the United States. This accomplishment is the accomplishment of the Rebbe. My son is going there. He would never do it on his own because he feels the Rebbe is backing him and the Rebbe is sending him there. He's going as a shliach, as an emissary of the Lubavitcher. My son is not the only one. There is thousands of families who are extended across the entire world to bring the word of God, to bring and inspire with pure, unconditional love, every corner of the world, to illuminate, to light the lamps of holiness and godliness, and preparing the world for the great revelation of Mashiach. So my son opening it up today, I'm just using that as part of this idea that we're bringing out, that it's the seventh tzaddik whose job is to bring God into the world, into the physical earth across the entire world. And that's the significance of the Rebbe with number seven. Gimel Tammuz, which was commemorated just the other day on Tuesday, is the third day of the month of Tammuz. So the number seven connected to that. That's the Rebbe's a day very deeply connected to the Rebbe. Gimel Tammuz is number seven. Why? It's the third day of the fourth month, the Hebrew calendar. The months start in April, in Nisan. So Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz. Tammuz is the fourth month. Gimel Tammuz is the third day of the fourth month. So 3 and 4 equals 7. Now Gimel Tammuz, I mentioned earlier, was the day that the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe was released from jail in 1927. Tafresh Pei Zayin. And he wasn't yet freed. It took another week. But then eventually he was freed. He was in Poland for 10 years. And then he finally came to America in 1940. He was in Latvia and then in Poland. Came by the beginning of the Holocaust. He escaped the war, came to America. Opened up shop in Eastern Parkway. So the Rebbe explains, as we're going to see soon, that Gimel Tammuz is the beginning of the redemption of the previous Rebbe, and it's the beginning of the next phase of the Jewish people. The next phase of the Jewish people is to relocate the center of Judaism from Europe to the United States of America, which we're soon going to see is pivotal. It's very, very important, very significant. It's not just another place. It's actually hinges upon the entire purpose of creation. The high purpose of Judaism and the entire deepest purpose, satisfaction that God has from the world is associated with the headquarters of Judaism moving from Europe to the United States of America. We'll see soon. But when does that day start? On Gimel Tammuz, which is number seven, which is alluding to the idea that although the previous Chabad Rebbe that that the although the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe was still going to be Rebbe after 1927 for another 13 years, right? From 1927, no, not even 13, another 23 years. Another 23 years, the previous Rebbe was still going to be Rebbe, but those last 23 years of his life, which is a very, very big part of his leadership, altogether he was Rebbe for 30 years, but that last 23 years, he was laying the foundations in a very deep way for his successor, for the next Rebbe. So in a sense, we can say that to a certain degree, the seventh generation started already, or at least starts to germinate on Gimel Tammuz. That's why Gimel Tammuz is number seven. So the Rebbe is very much deeply connected to number seven, as we discussed. Now, the Lubavitcher Rebbe is also deeply connected to number 11. Last night, I was coming back from New York, and my flight was supposed to leave at 8 o'clock, and then it was delayed, and we only ended up leaving at 12 midnight. So I'm a little tired now. Got here at 4 a.m., back to L.A. I brought with me a young boy who was an unaccompanied minor, a Chabad, a son of a Chabad rabbi who just had his bar mitzvah. And we ended up spending in the, because he needed someone to take his son back. He couldn't come back with him because he was traveling on to Israel to a Chabad conference of Chabad rabbis of campuses. Okay. So there's now Chabad has become so influenced in the world that there's a whole section of Chabad rabbis that are on college campuses to help Jews, young men and women that are searching and need a connection, to be able to seek out the Jews that are there and remind them that they're Jewish and they can do a mitzvah and so on and so forth. So they're having a conference now in Israel. So he brought his son with him to New York to visit the Rebbe for his son's bar mitzvah. He continued on to Israel, and his son, he put out a notice that anybody coming back on Wednesday, and I reached out. I didn't know he was going to send his son with me, but I offered, and I brought his son back. We ended up spending a few hours in the airport because we were delayed, and we were getting on the plane because I fly a lot to speak, and to this I have a little status. So I was able to upgrade this boy. He was supposed to sit in the back of the plane, so I was able to get him an upgrade because he was an unaccompanied minor, and he was able to sit, not upgrade to first class. I don't have such status, but at least the extra leg room. So I moved him up, and I shared with him his boarding pass, which the lady had given the attendant by the gate, gave him a boarding pass, and I gave him his new boarding pass. I said, you see, you're sitting on row 11, and I was also on row 11. And I said to him, you see, you know why we're on number 11 as we were boarding the plane? I said, you know why we're on number 11? He said, why? I said, because the Rebbe is number 11. And he looked at me, he said, why is the Rebbe number 11? He's a very intelligent boy, a very smart boy. But he says to me, why is the Rebbe number 11? So I said to him, well, the Rebbe's birthday is on the 11th day of Nisan. So the Rebbe is number 11. His birthday is the 11th. And it's not random at all that his birthday is on the 11th day of Nisan, because the Rebbe became Rebbe his day of his birth was on the 11th day of Nisan, but the day that he became Rebbe, his father-in-law passed away. Someone is calling and calling, and I'm wondering if this has anything to do with maybe not having, is my sound good? Can someone just, a lot of times I get phone calls when my sound is bad. Do you hear me good? Just want to make sure if someone on the YouTube or anywhere can give me is my sound okay? If anybody can make a comment here. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Venus. Oh, look at this. Good. Thank you. All right. So I'm good. Thank you. All right. So the Rebbe became Rebbe in the year, the Hebrew year, 5711 was when the Rebbe's took on the official mantle of leadership. And when was that? On the 11th month. The month of Shvat is the 11th month of the Jewish calendar. which day of the month? His father-in-law passed away on the 10th. The Rebbe, on the first anniversary of his father-in-law's passing, became Rebbe, but the Rebbe did not officially become Rebbe till the night. He waited, because the Fabrengans, the way the gathering the Rebbe would hold, was always at the end of the day when it was ready night. So it was the eve of the 11th day of Shvat, the 11th day of the 11th month of the 11th year, 5711. To make it even more exciting, when did the Rebbe officially became, the Rebbe started giving various different talks, but the highlight of the evening, of the moment the Rebbe became Rebbe, the highlight of the evening was at 10:40 p.m. when the Rebbe started saying the discourse, Basi Lagani, in which he describes that there are seven tzaddikim who brought the Shekhinah down to this world. And everybody in Chabad is inspired till today. Anybody that connects to the Rebbe by Basi Lagani, that's when the Rebbe laid out the purpose of his leadership to bring the Shekhinah finally down into this world. And that's where he declared that we're the seventh generation. And our job is to complete the job to bring God down into this world for the grand finale. And what time was it? 10:40. And the Rebbe was saying the middle of the discourse when it turned 11 p.m. And you can even say that the beginning of it, although it was still within the hour of 10, but 10:40 is inside the 11th hour. So this is absolutely crazy. It's the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month in the 11th year. And he became Rebbe when? I'm sorry, and when was he born? On the 11th day of Nisan. So the Rebbe has the number 11 written all over him. Now, this is not what I'm talking about. The Rebbe himself explains in lengthy talks, in both in the year 5750, maybe in many years, but primarily in the year 5750, 57.1, and 57.2, I'm sorry, 5752. The last 3 years we heard the Rebbe talking to us, the Rebbe talking. The Rebbe in all these places explains the significance of number 11. That number 11, what does number 11 mean? Number 11 is the complete unification of God and the world. Why? The Rebbe explains. Creation, and when we say creation, we mean even the divinity of creation, which means even the divine energy that is the skeleton of creation, that's the underlying backbone of creation, is all made up of a system of 10. That's why numbers go till 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then it starts again, over again, 11. Because everything is based on a system of 10. And we know it. This goes all the way. God created the world with 10 utterances. And this traces it back up from the Kabbalistic perspective, that there are 10 sefirot, 10 attributes through which God directs his divine flow into the world. 3 intellectual attributes, 7 emotional attributes. Together they make up 10. So that's the significance of 10. 10 is the world. 10 is the godly infrastructure of the world. It's all 10. What's number 11? 11 is God himself, which means the infinite light that's beyond boundaries, beyond definition. Or in Kabbalistic terminology, number 11 is the level of Keser. Keser means the crown that sits above the intellect, that the crown that sits and envelops and encircles and encompasses all the 10 sefirot. In the words of the Rebbe, which he quotes from the Zohar, that the Zohar says there are 10 sefirot, and then there says, but earlier it says, Antu chad, you are one, v'loy b'chushpan, you're not calculated of the in the 10 sefirot. You're above the 10. So the Rebbe says, God himself is one. The creation is a system of 10. The fusion of God into the creation, the unification of God into the world, permeating every aspect of the world, where the one, the singular oneness of God, completely permeates and reveals itself in every point in creation, that's number 11. So when the creation is filled with the light, so first the Rebbe, by the way, the way the Rebbe explains it is as follows. First, our work for thousands of years is to uncover the godliness that's within the world. That's the godliness of number 10. It's our work to uncover the godly, the 10 sefirot, the 10 attributes that are embedded and are the kind of the backbone of creation. And that too, we have to dig and reveal. after we complete the work of uncovering all the godly aspects of number 10, which is the completion of making the world holy, then something much deeper and godly and a much higher aspect is revealed. The keser, the crown of Mashiach, the infinite light of God is suddenly revealed in the world, and that's number 11. And the Rebbe spoke that in connection to his leadership. In connection, the Rebbe in his humility doesn't speak about himself. He speaks about the final stage of his father-in-law's leadership. In other words, he explains that his father-in-law, the previous Chabad Rebbe, is connected to number 10. And his leadership was the perfection of number 10. And that's why he says his father-in-law passed away on the 10th day, because he reached the climax. He reached the highest level of number 10. And that's the high, and that is holiness in its most perfect state. Like it says in the end of Leviticus, in the end of Vayikra, it says, Asiri Yia Kodesh, the 10th one is holy. So the Rebbe is referring to, says that my father-in-law reached the peak of number 10. But then he says, my father-in-law, after he passed away, his holiness moved to a much higher level. He's now channeling number 11 through his students, through his success, the continuation of. So obviously that's referring to his leader, the Rebbe, the number 7th, the 7th leader, who's the continuation of the 6th leader, but is taking it to a whole new level, is taking it to number 11. Once I mentioned that the previous Rebbe is number 10, let's explore that a bit, because this is important for this class. Even though these ideas I explained already and we shared already in many classes, but I'm going to do it one more time so there's clarity for those who are want to understand. The previous Rebbe's name starts with a letter Yud, his first name, Yosef. His second name is Yitzchak. Both these names, Yosef and Yitzchak, start with the letter Yud. Yud is 10. So he has both names, with both of them are indicative of his connection to the spiritual energy of number 10. He passed away when? On the 10th day of the month. So the Rebbe says the passing of a person says a lot about what his energy is. Number 10. In addition to that, the Rebbe said, the previous Rebbe was born in the year 1840. In the Hebrew calendar, 56. I'm sorry. Previous Rebbe was born in, let me give him a second. No. He's born in the year 1880. Sorry. He was born in 1880, which is the Hebrew calendar 5640. But the point over here is that he was born on a year that was divisible by 10, both in the Hebrew calendar 5640. 40 is an even number. It's a 10 number, right? It's broken up in four times 10 is 40. Even in the secular calendar, it was Gregorian calendar. It was 1880. Again, a number divisible by 10. And then when he became Rebbe, the year that he became, that he assumed the mantle of leadership over the Hasidim and becomes the world leader that he was, that was in the year 1920. He was 40 years old. Again, an even number, a number divisible by 10. Perfect number of 10. And he was Rebbe, his leadership was 30 years. Again, a number divided by 10. Those 30 years were divided into three sections. 10 years was primarily in the fighting the communists in Russia. 10 years he was in Poland. And 10 years he was already in the United States of America. 10, 10, and 10. The Rebbe also points out in that talk something interesting, that the previous Rebbe, especially the last year of his life, when he was signing his name, he was writing his first letter of his name, which is the Yud. He wrote it like a sofer writes in a Torah. In other words, everybody knows that when you write Hebrew letters, there is script writing and there is Torah scroll writing. Most, when we all write letters or we exchange, we don't write Torah the same fonts The font that is written in the Torah is a special font. We don't use that font. The previous Rebbe signed his name. All the letters were regular script letters, but the Yud, he highlighted it as a Sofer Yud. And the Rebbe says the reason he did that, Ulai, the Rebbe says maybe, perhaps, if I remember correctly the words that he uses, something like that, is because he was emphasizing his connection to number 10. Because his spiritual source was in the level of number 10, especially as he was coming closer and closer to the day of his passing, which was on the 10th day. I forgot already. I made a mistake. I didn't make a mistake. I made many mistakes, but this one. When I emphasized all time, he passed away on the 10th day, but I forgot to emphasize. He passed away on the 10th day of the Hebrew year, the 10th day of the 11th month. Okay, it was the 11th month. It wasn't the 10th day of the 10th month. It was the 10th day of the 11th month of, but it was in the year 5710. Tafshin Yud, emphasizing the 10 again. And then right before he passed away, you see the last letters that he wrote a day or two before his passing, Yud that he writes when he signs his name is so clear that he's making it like the font of a Torah. So this is all very telling about his spiritual energy. So what does that tell us? That the previous Rebbe, who is the sixth Chabad Rebbe, is associated with number 10. The seventh Chabad Rebbe, who is the seventh Rebbe, he is associated with number 11 as it is scripted into the way God orchestrated their lives. So what we have over here is an interesting combination. We have like this, a formula, 6-10 and 7-11. And that's why I'm excited that it's July 11th and it's 7-11. And that's why I took a particular interest in this company, 7-11. And I looked at their whole history and I found some super cool things, which I'd like to share. And when I say super cool, it's really cool because 7-Eleven started as an ice company. They were called Southland Ice Company. They opened up. Their first store was in 1927. We'll soon see the significance of that. We're in Dallas, Texas. We'll soon see the significance of that. And let's talk for a moment. What are all the accomplishments of 7-Eleven? The accomplishments of the company of 7-Eleven, they are the first convenience store. You can look this up on their website. They are the first convenience store. Here's the next fact. They're the first 24/7 market. The first market in the world, I can't say the world because that's a known market. Whether someone had a little shop in somewhere in the middle of China that was open 24/7, that's possible. But as a franchise, as a company that had stores open 24/7, they are the first ones. They are the first company who initiated coffee on the go. It used to be if you wanted a coffee, you had to go into a cafeteria, sit down with a waiter, and they'll serve you coffee in a serious coffee mug. Paper cup coffee on the go, 7-Eleven. They're the first ones. They were the first ones who initiated self-serve soda machines. Okay, so you can walk in. You don't need the service person to give you the soda. You can fill up your soda on your own. Self-serve soda machines. 7-Eleven counts that as one of their novelties. By the way, 1963 was when the 7-Eleven started their first store. I'm sorry, to be open 24 hours started in 1963. Now everything is so perfect. it drives me insane of how crazy perfect all of this is, but we're going to get to that soon. And another fact that we need to know is that in 1946 is when they gave their name 7-Eleven. Initially, it was Southland Ice Company. They started calling it 7-Eleven because they were open from 7 to 11. Before they became a 24-hour store that's open 24 hours, they were open from 7 to 11. So remember those dates. 1927 is there where their company starts. 1946 is when they get their name 7-Eleven. 1963 is their first store that is open 24 hours. Now, how did that happen? How did it come about? And it used to be that when you were woke up in the middle of the night or you were up late and you needed food, you needed, you were hungry and you wanted to get yourself a dozen eggs, couldn't go anywhere. Markets were all closed. Needed a bottle of milk, couldn't get it anywhere. A thing of beer, couldn't get it. Maybe a bar that was open, but a place that you can go in and get basic necessities, it wasn't available. You had to wait till the morning. Stores would open up 24/7. When did it start? When did 7-Eleven do that? What's so beautiful, and you're going to see how this is so amazing, wasn't because they decided they want to do that. It happened, what we might say, accidentally. And it started in a store in Houston. What was the story? There was some kind of, in 1963, there was some kind of sports event, and college students in Houston that were really partying because of the win, I'm not exactly sure, were just coming into the store. When it came hours to close, they just kept on coming in. So the clerk didn't shut the store because he just kept on serving them. And there were so many college kids, they kept on coming, and everybody heard that the store is still open, so they kept on coming in and in and in. It ended up by demand, by just the people showing up, that they were open for 24 hours. And I guess when the guy reported it to company, whatever, they said, it's not a bad idea. So from that, and the official store that was open for 24 hours, the first one was in Las Vegas. And then this idea was carried over to everybody. To me, so many different stores that are open 7-Eleven. By the way, 7-Eleven is a parent company that now owns a lot of other names like Speedway and others that are all under the company of 7-Eleven. They're owned actually now by a Japanese company. There are 84,000 stores worldwide. Someone just told me today that there is a new one they just opened up in Israel, in Tel Aviv, which I think is interesting. Okay, so you're getting your 7-Eleven facts from me. But let's take it further. Their other innovation was they made the Big Gulp. Okay, so their pride. I'm looking at all the things that they're so proud of and they put on their website. So they have the Big Gulp. And today when I was standing in front of 7-Eleven waiting for my son to bring out the two Slurpees, I thought he's only going to get one Slurpee. He came out with two. He asked, he said, the clerk was such a nice guy. He said, I said to him, my dad is outside. Can I take one for him? He said, yeah, you can have one. So if only 7-Eleven would know what kind of advertisement I'm giving for them, they would probably send me a whole bunch of more Slurpees. But what's the story? Let's continue. So what do we have from 7-Eleven? We have from them, let's work from our way back. They initiated the Big Gulp. I was standing outside. I saw a guy come out with the big cup, and it said Big Gulp on it, and it made me happy because it was part of my talk that I was thinking to share with you today. So we got the Big Gulp. We got the Slurpees. Okay. What's Slurpees? Slurpees is melted ice, slush. That's their drink. And I'm sure it has a whole bunch of different names and manifestations in various different companies. But I think the initial Slurpees is a 7-Eleven thing. Again, they're the first convenience store, which what does it mean by convenience store? They were selling ice. But once they were selling ice, they just figured that people come in for ice. Now, ice has to be, today when I was, I spoke about this earlier, I gave a class in Hebrew to a group of Israelis in Israel, a Zoom class. And as I was giving over these ideas, it occurred to me something really interesting, that being that they're an ice company, you have to be local. You're talking in 1927, so there wasn't much refrigeration. So people have to bring ice to keep things cool, okay, in Texas, which is very hot. So an ice store has to be local because if you're going far away, by the time you get home, your ice has melted. So you kind of need that ice. The icing should be a local store. Well, once they figured that, they started selling bread and milk and other things because they figured people are coming locally. There grew out the convenience store, which means a local source of food. You don't have to travel far to get your basic necessities if you're living in a rural area, if you're not living in the city. And, you know, and every, that the local store, like the idea today that gas stations have all the basic necessities is probably an outgrowth of 7-Eleven, of that idea that you can get your basic necessities as a convenience store in a local market. That's the idea. Okay. So now, so we have the convenience store. We have 24/7 and, what else? I forgot. And on the go coffee. On the go. First ones to do on the go coffee. So let's see what's the significance. And what does all of this have to do with the Rebbe, with the Lubavitch Rebbe, who is 7-Eleven? So let's get back to mysticism. Let's get back to the Kabbalah. Okay? How do you know Mashiach is here? When Mashiach is here, you can look into Kabbalah, into the deepest concepts of Kabbalah, and you look into the newspaper, and you see, you're reading the same thing. That means that the Kabbalistic concepts are not hidden in some mystical book, but they're written all over in everything you see. That's Mashiach. So for those of you who are surprised that a rabbi would sit and spend so much time talking about silly things like Slurpees and Big Gulps and 7-Eleven, I want you to tell you that exactly that silly thing that we are doing over here, that is Mashiach. The only difference is that when Mashiach is here, everybody's going to be doing it. Because that's Mashiach. Mashiach is that you're seeing God in everything. And nothing is random. And you're on the lucky channel that we're doing it already a day before Mashiach is fully revealed to the entire world. So thank God we're able to have, Baruch Hashem, great insights here and share it and hopefully entertain you guys as well. So here, let's go. Let's go. Let's do a deep dive right into this. Okay, so here we work. Here's what's happening. What's the concept that 7 is 11 and 6 is 10? So let's take a look at the letter Vav. In Hebrew, which letter is the number 6? The number 6 is, if you go beginning from the beginning of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav. So Vav is the sixth letter, and that's why in the Gematria world, a Vav equals the numeric value of 6. Now, even just by looking at a Vav, if you look at the letter Vav, you see that the top of the Vav, the head of the Vav, is a Yud. When you start writing a Vav, you're really first making a Yud, and then you're just making a Yud. Well, Yud is the letter that represents 10. And what makes the difference between a Yud and a Vav is only one thing, that in a Yud, there is a tiny, tiny little point on the bottom. And in a Vav, that point goes down and becomes a long leg. It goes all the way down to the, so a Vav is really a Yud on a stick. That's a Vav. So what does that mean mystically? That the energy of the Vav is derived from the Yud. The Yud is the source of the Vav. The energy flows from the Yud to the Vav. That already is an indication of the concept that we're saying. Number 6, was the sixth Rebbe, is rooted in the Yud, which is 10. Now let's give it a little bit more of a deeper understanding. What does that mean? Vav is masculine energy. Vav is the letter, and you see it actually in Hebrew. Whenever something is meant to be in masculine form, for example, this is my hand. A hand is in Hebrew called a yad, a hand. If I want to attribute the hand to a man, and I want to say his hand, in Hebrew, I would take the word yudalit, which means hand, and I add a vav to it, and it would become yado, his hand. So the Vav makes it into his, belonging to a man. If I want to speak about a woman's hand, and I want to say her hand, then I would say, Yadah, instead of yado, I would say yada, which means at the end of the word yudalid, I add a hey, not a vav. So hey is a feminine letter, but vav is a male letter. It's a masculine letter. Now, so therefore we have to realize that whenever we're going to have a manifestation of number six, which is the vav, it has to do with masculinity. Therefore, in the Sefirot, in the divine attributes, which attribute is number six? The sixth attribute, counting the emotional attributes, is Yesod. Yesod is foundation. So there are six powers of emotion. Chesed, kindness, Gevurah, strength and judgment, Teferes, which means beauty, and truth and balance, and harmony. And then there is Netzach, victory and perseverance, Hod, glory and subservience. And finally, Yesod, which is the one we're talking about, which means bonding and foundation. So physiologically, the right hand is the Chesed, the left hand is the Gevurah, the torso is the Teferes, the right leg is the Netzach, the left leg is the Hod, and the reproductive organ, the ability to create and have children, the place of bonding between the male and the female, which really means the real masculine power of the man, that's Yesod. And that's the Vav. So in any spiritual, at any time so what does that mean? Let's see what that means. God is the ultimate man. The creation is the woman. Because in Kabbalah, man and woman is giver and receiver. The creation is a receiver to receive divine influence. God is the male, the one who provides, the provider, the giver, the influencer. So there is an influencer from above and there is a recipient from below. The deepest influence that the giver can give is when he gives from the deepest part of himself, and that is to create a child. Then you're giving, and that's what a husband gives to his wife in his deepest love to her. He transmits of his essence to her, and then she can create further children and generations. So Yesod, which is the bonding, which is the deepest giving, is the male's transmission. That's Yesod. In a sense, it's the sexual energy of the man. That's why we know that all of these attributes, every single one of these, were personified by a different person. Abraham was the energy of God's right hand, kindness manifest in a human body. Isaac, Yitzchak, is the power of God's stern discipline. And that's why he represents God's left hand. Jacob is the torso, the Teferis. And I'm not going to go into each one because we studied this many times. Moshe is perseverance. And Netzach, God's right leg. Aaron is Hod, the left leg. Who's the number six? Who's this powerful, divine, bonding energy, masculine energy of Hashem? That's Joseph. It's all over Kabbalah. I don't have to give you sources much for that. But Joseph, that's the why in the Torah, the only person who we find that is very clearly been tested with a sexual test and overcame and was and managed to retain his saintlyhood and his holiness and did not fall, succumb to temptation. Right? One of the elements that one of the most difficult struggles in human experience is to keep one's sexuality completely holy and godly, uncontaminated. So who is that? That's Joseph. When he went down to Egypt, we know the story. The wife, his mistress, tried to seduce him. And if we read in the Midrash, we read that the seduction went on for a year. She did whatever she can. She was madly in love with him. He was the man of men. He was the ultimate handsome person. And I guess he exuberated such an energy, and she was completely captivated by him. But she couldn't get him. He ran away, left his garment with her. He sat in jail because of that. Because he is Yesod. He's that masculine God energy, but a divine energy of Yesod in this world. His name is Yosef. Yosef means to add, which means to add more to the world, to fill the bowl. Creation is this big, massive bowl, to fill it with divine blessing. And that's why Yosef, he brings all the blessings to Egypt, feeds the entire world. He's the pouring of sustenance from above, where Joseph is the channel of life. The whole world is, that's why he's called Tzadik Yesod Olam. He's Tzadik, the foundation of the world, because all of God's influence in the world flows through the one who's the Tzadik, who's the one who can channel that flow of energy into the world. The previous Lubavitch Rebbe, who takes the role of Joseph, but in the end of time, Joseph is in the beginning story of history. Remember we said earlier that the seven righteous individuals repeat themselves twice in history, once in the beginning of creation to lead into the Exodus, and then in the end, in the grand, great scheme of things. Previous Chabad Rebbe's name is Joseph. Yosef Yitzchak, same name. And just like his ancestor Yosef sat in jail, they threw him into prison, threw to the communists, the Bolsheviks, took Rebbe Yosef Yitzchak, now is the season of it, and almost killed him, just like Joseph was almost died. They took him in, same idea. And just like Joseph was the one who came to, and Joseph back then came to Egypt and laid the foundation for the Jewish people to be able to do their work in Egypt. It says had the Jewish people, had Joseph not gone down to Egypt, then if the Jewish people would have gone to Egypt without Joseph going before them, then Egypt and the lowliness and the darkness and the evil and the impurity of Egypt would have completely destroyed them. It was because Joseph went before them, he gave them the strength to withstand and to overpower Egypt and to take out all the sparks of holiness from Egypt. And eventually, as a result of that, come to the giving of the Torah. Come to the great moment of where the Torah was given to the world. So Yosef is the one who leads the Jewish people in Egypt and gives them the power to endure Egypt, although their actual work happens after Yosef passes away. Because the Egyptian enslavement did not kick in until Joseph passed away. Why? Because as long as Joseph, who is the channel of godliness to the world, is present, there is such a divine revelation there, coming along with him, that the darkness of the exile can't take grip of the Jewish people. We're too illuminated. We have too much light. The unholy can't enslave us. But after Joseph passed away, he gave them the power, but he couldn't be present anymore. But it says that unlike his father Jacob, he wasn't, his body, his coffin, the ark that held his body, his coffin that held him, was stayed in Egypt. They put him, the last words in Genesis, Vayasim ba'arim b'mitzrayim, they put him in a casket, in a coffin in Egypt. It says that had Joseph not been in the coffin, his body, then the Jewish people would have not withstood. He empowered them. But he told the Jewish people, when you leave Egypt, take me along. And that's when they took him along with them. Because he was their backbone, he was their power. So fast forward a few thousand years. Joseph of our generation, previous Chabad Rebbe, named Joseph, right after he comes out of, from the clutches of the communists, where does he go? He went to Latvia because he had to leave Russia. He went to Latvia and he spent there a while. I'm not exactly sure, like two years or so. I'm not sure, something like that. And then eventually 2 or 3 years, and eventually goes to Poland, to Warsaw. And he's there for 10 years. But then life circumstances and the entire shift of God was shifting the planet through the world wars and all of that, landed, just like it did to most of the Jewish people, from the shores of Europe, transported the Jewish experience to the United States of America. to Canada, to America, and many Jews also went to Australia. So these are all very significant things, as we're soon going to see, why this was. Previous Rebbe goes there as well, the last 10 years of his life, and sets up shop in New York. What is the significance of that? America, Canada, this entire last place, the last station where the Jewish people are going to be before the redemption, that's called Egypt. Although the Jewish people were not enslaved physically in the United States, quite on the contrary, it was the best place we've had in history from all the other places where we've been so persecuted. But spiritually, the United States represented the greatest threat for the Jewish survival, for the Jewish people to remain intact spiritually. Because the United States provided the Jewish people with such freedom. And with together with that freedom and the ability for a person to be able to become wealthy and rich and to prosper, and so all of that would serve as a great distraction that could, God forbid, take their hearts away from religion and observances. And so it did. Until the previous rabbi came to America, thousands and thousands of Jews that were coming across the ocean, coming on ships, and sailed across the ocean and landed in the New York Harbor or wherever else, other points of entries they were coming in, where the Jewish people were coming over to the United States of America, to the New World. When they stepped shores on the New World, they totally forgot the Old World. It was very, very hard to be a Jew in the United States of America. And most of them just assimilated. The assimilation was just absolutely stunning. The New World. They forgot the Old World. Like it says in Egypt, it says they forgot Joseph. The Old World was forgotten. The previous Rebbe came to America, and the previous Rebbe came onto the shores of the United States of America, and he made a very strong statement. He said, everybody says America is different. Over here, you can't be Jewish like you were in the old times. And I declare that America is nicht anders. She said in Yiddish, America is not different. We will conquer the United States, and not conquer in terms of conquering the America, in terms of we will conquer it with holiness, which means we will implement Judaism and holiness and Jewish institutions across the United States of America. We're going to bring God to America. Now, there were many religious Jews in America. I'm not saying when I said assimilation, doesn't mean that everybody assimilated. There were many pious and observant Jews in the United States of America that were not Hasidim. There were Hasidim and there were non-Hasidim. There were a lot of rabbis. There were great people. But America, Judaism was in decline, in a terrible state of decline. And assimilation was rampant like anything. What the previous rabbi did was that he turned the tide. Not himself. He began, he laid the foundation, and then his son-in-law, the seventh rabbi, was the one who really, really muscled his way in, meaning not wrong words. I'm not going to say muscle because the exact point is the opposite. It's not muscling his way. Our Rebbe, in a unique way, as we're soon going to explain, was able to turn the United States of America around and wake up the Jewish spark in the Jews in America that have already been assimilated, who were cold and who were indifferent, and awaken their Jewish spark and bring them slowly but surely back to observance. There's still a lot of work to do, but the Rebbe set up. But the beautiful thing the Rebbe explains is not only did the Rebbe manage to save America, the previous Rebbe and the Rebbe save American Jewry, but they were able to use the United States of America as a base to actually strengthen and exponentially explode Jewish observance across the entire globe, across the entire world, including my son's outpost in Alaska today. Everywhere, across the entire, there isn't a state where there isn't Chabad, but across the entire world. Yeshiva, mikvahs, everywhere, Torah is studied, learn everything, unbelievable. So what is the significance? What is the meaning over here? Going back to the previous Rebbe. The previous Rebbe is number 6, representing masculine energy. a masculine. Oh, so let's understand that for a moment. So what does that mean? Let's give a little bit more insight over here. The Rebbe explains, the seventh Rebbe explains, that one of the innovations of our generation, the Rebbe says, of the seventh generation, is that there is an entire shift in the energy of the world. Instead of godly energy flowing from God to the from the higher world, from the spiritual worlds to the physical worlds, instead of all the divine consciousness coming to the world, now with divine consciousness comes divine blessings. Because everything in the physical is a reflection of the spiritual. So in place of the way it was for thousands of years, that all the divine input is coming to the world from the heavens above, through the channels of holiness, what changed in 1940, the Rebbe says, when my father-in-law came to America, is that he says there's a very deep shift over here. Instead of godliness coming from heaven, we are starting to do something new. The last generation, the seventh generation before Mashiach comes, our work is to uncover the potential and the godly potential that is not in heaven, but that is on earth. Which means to bring forth holiness and godliness, not from up down, but from the bottom up. That divine consciousness shouldn't come from heavenly, from the heaven, from the old world, from Europe, from Sinai, from Abraham, from through the holy tzaddikim who are channeling godliness down, consciousness from above, but rather it should sprout forth from the earth. And the Rebbe based this idea, let me just try to crystallize this idea a little better. The Rebbe says that this idea is based on the concept that the first Chabad Rebbe, Shneur Zalman of Liadi, once expressed himself about America. He said, America is the lower half of the globe. It's the part of the globe where the Torah was not given on. He referred to it as Chatzi Kadur HaTachton. The world is a kadur, is a ball. It's the lower half of the ball where the Torah was not given on that part. It's the other side of Sinai. It's the other side of Israel, of Jerusalem. So what does that mean? What is the Alter Rebbe saying over here? Is he playing just with a nice, fun thing? Okay, it's the other side where the Torah wasn't given. What does he mean? There's a very deep, is an unbelievable depth over here. And that is as follows. What's considered the top of the world? So in our way of world, the way we see things, the top of the world is the North Pole. From the perspective of science, let's say. Top of the world is the North Pole, the South Pole is the bottom of the world, and then you have the equator in the middle and so forth. But since the world is a globe and it's round, it's a ball in a sense, you can't point, and the sky is circular, we're floating in space, there is no point where you say is the top. Why is the North Pole the top and the South the bottom? Maybe the South Pole is the top and the North is the bottom. So you can point any place. So according to Torah, the top of the world is the holiest part of the world. What's the holiest part of the world? Israel. Israel is considered the top of the world. Sinai, which is quite close to Israel, right? The Sinai Desert and then Mount Sinai. It's all called it because that's the top of the world, meaning the more heavenly side. That's the side where God resides in, or rather revealed himself in the past. So the Alter Rebbe is saying, being that that's the top of the world, the Alter Rebbe says, so the closer you get to Israel, the more receptive the world is to God, because the more impacted it was by the giving of, when God gave the Torah, he left such an impression on the world, the closer you are to the epicenter, the more influenced you are by the divine vibrations from Sinai. Similar to the idea that the earlier generations, the one closest to Sinai, were the holiest generations. This is the concept you always hear in from Jewish rabbis and from Torah scholars, that the earlier generations, they were so holy and we can't compare it to them. And there's a truth to that. Because the closer you are to the source, and the source was at Sinai, and the source was in Israel when the temple stood, and all the godly flow came. So the closer you are there in time and in space, the more influenced you are. According to this philosophy, the farther you go from Israel, both in space, especially when you go around the equator and you come to the underbelly, the other side of the globe, which happens to be the United States of America, North America, South America, and Australia. It's all on the underside of, if you put Israel on the top, that side is naturally ungodly, far more less godly receptive and conscious of godliness than the upper side. Therefore, that's what the Alter Rebbe said. So the Rebbe explains, since God's objective in creation was that he wanted a home in the low, which means God chose the physical world. Physical world, first of all, is the lowest world. There are many worlds above this world that are filled with spiritual light, godly light, higher and higher. This physical world is the lowest. But in the physical world itself, we have to realize there is a heaven inside the physical world, which is Israel. The closer you are, they're closer to heaven. They're the upper side of the physical world, and then there is the lower side of the physical world, the earth of the physical world, the earth of the earth. So that's the lower half of the world. So the Rebbe says an amazing teaching. Throughout Jewish history, from the beginning of when the Torah was given, from Sinai, throughout all, Jewish people were always just on the upper part of the globe. All the Jewish communities were closer to Israel. And then later, as the exile continued, the migration happened to farther places. We went to Europe, but even Europe is on the upper part of the world. And all the great rabbis and all the great teachers, they're all part of that European, and therefore up North Africa, all the places where there were Jewish communities, Middle East, all were influenced by Sinai. And therefore, the Rebbe says it's only preparation. It doesn't really, really reach the ultimate purpose of creation. Because the ultimate purpose of creation is that godliness should reach the lowest places. So therefore, the Rebbe says, only right before Mashiach comes, when we're holding at the very, very end of the exile, at the very end of the exile, we merit something really amazing. We break this barrier. And this happened, it took two wars, two world wars to shake the world up and transport the Jewish people, the migration, and put the Jewish people down and under, on the bottom of the earth, so that we can make the bottom of the world holy. Okay, but that's not the depth of it. That means that we are extending the influence of Sinai, the influence of heaven, even to the earth. Even to the lowest part of the world. That's accomplishment number one. But that's not the ultimate accomplishment yet. The ultimate accomplishment is something much deeper than that. Once you bring godly awareness and consciousness through Torah and mitzvot, through holy rabbis, and the previous Chabad Rebbe wasn't the only one. There were great tzaddikim, great rabbis, Rosh Hashivas, and other great people who helped bring the Torah across the Atlantic to the lower part and has gone to different places. The novelty of Chabad, and this is the main point, and this is what is much deeper than that. It's not to continue the light from the past and bring it down here, but when you hit rock bottom, and you bring holiness to the lowest of places, something magical happens. You unlock a very, very deep mystery. And what's the mystery? The deepest and highest and most potent and boundless light of God is hidden and buried in earth and the earthiness of earth. That means, and when we say that that's buried over there, means it's waiting to be unlocked. When that's unlocked, we suddenly experience a surge of spiritual energy and divine consciousness and godly truth that is infinitely more potent than all the energy that was ever drawn down from heaven to earth. So bringing godly light down into the lower hemisphere doesn't only extend the energy and the light that was here before, the spiritual energy and the light that was here before extended even to the lower part, but it stimulates, or rather it triggers a volcano, a volcanic eruption, a spiritual, like a volcano, meaning the lava that's buried in earth, the infinite, godly, deepest truth that's buried in the lowest material element of the world, which is in earth, but in the lowest part of the earth, suddenly comes to the earth surface, comes forth from the earth, and from the lowest part of the world, it travels upward, not downward, and it engulfs the entire planet with godly consciousness. And that's Mashiach. Mashiach is when holiness is not coming from the rabbi. Holiness is not coming from Jerusalem. Holiness is not coming from heaven. Holiness is coming from the street corners. Holiness is coming from the newspaper. Holiness is coming from the television. Holiness is coming from the computer. Holiness is coming from humanity. And holiness is coming not from the soul of humanity, but from the body of humanity, from the very physical elements of this world. Let me put this into, for a moment, into the language we were talking earlier. We spoke about six being masculine energy, a flow of godliness to the world from above. Sinai was a masculine event. God reveals himself to the world. Prophets, they're all masculinity. God is communicating with them. They are channels of godliness to the world. Torah is masculine. Torah is coming from above. God is pouring his insight to the world. Now, being that in order for something to be perfect, it has to have a feminine side as well. So, for example, in the Torah, we have the Torah, the scripture, which is God communicating. We also have the oral Torah, which is Torah coming from the people, the rabbis themselves innovating. So that's called feminine Torah, because that's coming from the recipient, from below. Okay, so you get the idea. But in general, Torah, all this is all masculinity. It's all light coming from above. But then there is the woman. So the Rebbe is basically saying, and this is, he says it in hundreds of discourses, it's this idea. That all masculine energy, all transmission from above is always to assert, when we are receiving it, we can only receive it with a limit. It's limited energy. And it's seen in the fact that we spoke earlier. What's the root of the vav? The vav is the channel of masculinity. What's the root? The root is a yud. What's a yud? A yud is the number 10, which represents 10 sefirot, which is the construct of divinity that God set up to filter his infinite light into creation. It's a limited filter. But you also see it in the letter yud. The letter yud is a tiny little point, a decimal point. What that means is that in order for a finite creation to receive divine input, God has to contract it down to a little decimal point. And from that little point, from there can come the energy, the life, the enlightenment to the world. It's all limited. That's why whenever we're downloading godliness from above, it's all with a limit. It's all with a limit. How do we achieve that the world should be able to get married and receive God himself, the infinity of God? That power does not lie in the masculine light. That power is buried in the feminine, in the woman, not in the man. And we see it physically. Take a man and a woman. A woman has literally, her body is the body where a child is created. And that baby that is created will eventually get married and have children. So inside a woman's body is infinite generations. Honor, the power to create, to have children. She is the one who ovulates the egg. She's the one who produces the child. So really the infinite, a man, from a man nothing will happen. It will remain his generation. That's it. Only him, and with his passing, he's over. So the power of children is in the woman. But the woman cannot unlock her power without a man. In other words, for the woman has the power, but she needs the key to unlock her power. She doesn't hold the key. She doesn't have the key to unlock her own potential. For that, she needs physically, God made it that way, physically. The man comes, plants a seed. That's the yesod element, which is number 6, plants the seed to the woman, who's number 7. When he gives her the seed, he unlocks the potential that's in 7. What's in 7? 7 is the earth. 7 is malchut. 7 is the creation. 7 is the recipient. The recipient doesn't have anything without the influencer. The creation doesn't have anything without God. But what did God plant in the deep, deep, deep inside the womb? Deep inside the womb of the female, inside the womb of creation, inside the womb of the physical, of matter. What did God plant? The potential of his ultimate truth. His boundlessness is infinity. But matter can't unlock it without spiritual influence, without masculinity, which is spiritual influence. The world has enormous potential, but the world cannot unearth its potential without the Torah, which is the influence from above, which is the masculine light coming to the world to help the world uncover its infinity, its boundlessness. Let's talk about how masculine and feminine is present in our own bodies, in our own life. Our soul is male compared to the body. The body is the woman. The soul is the male. In the Zohar, it says that a soul and a body together is a husband and a wife. It's a marriage between man and woman. The soul is the spiritual energy. The soul has so much. The soul has life. The body doesn't have life. The body is a dead corpse. It's lifeless. And the soul has life, and the soul enlivens the body. Until Mashiach comes. There will come a time by the resurrection that the body is not going to need the soul to enliven it. The body is going to live with intrinsic life. The body is being plugged into the... In the body is going to be revealed the essence of God. In matter is going to be... And the soul is going to receive life from the body. The soul is going to experience the infinity of God from the body, from the earth. The woman is going to give the man after the man gave her. That's the way it works. In other words, when Mashiach will come, it will be an upside down world. Now throughout all of history, we see the world in very words was a very male world, a male dominant world, and we're seeing it in the world today. There's a shift. There's a shift in femininity was rising upward, and masculinity has been lacking. Or obviously the two need to work together, but you get the difference. One is a spiritual dynamic. The flow of energy from above is masculine, and the recipient is the woman is receiving, but she's not just receiving. When she receives, ultimately she opens up her own, what we might say, her own fountain, her own essence. And the essence that is in the limited vessels, in Kabbalah it says there's lights and there are vessels. So the lights are powerful, but the lights are only a ray of God. The energy is only a ray, and the ray is limited. The vessels seem to be so dead. But in those vessels, God imparts his essence. So it's a deep concept, but you're getting it. So therefore, what happens is like this. As long as the Jewish Torah centers were in Europe, and we weren't engaging yet the lower side of the world, everything, all holiness was coming from above, was coming from heaven to earth, was flowing in a godly flow from heaven. It was all coming. The earlier generations, everything was passed down. Everything was a tradition. Everything was coming from above. When we come to the lower half of the world, we switch from masculinity and we start to uncover the power that there is in the woman, to unearth the godly light that's from below. That's Mashiach consciousness. Now, this concept is the idea that number 7 is connected to number 11. Because what's 7? 7 is, as we said, if the six emotions are masculine, where does the man pour his energy to? Into the woman. She's the receiving. She's the receiving end. She's number 7. Malchut is feminine. It's the female Sephira attribute. It's number 7. She needs to be subservient to her husband to receive the energy from him. But he needs to be cognizant and aware that the real power lies in her, not in him. He's only here to unlock her power. Once he unlocks her power, then her power comes forth, her godly power. What's her power? What's number 7? 7 is rooted not in number 10. 10, we said, is a tiny little drop. 7 is rooted in number 11. 11 is infinity, boundlessness, infinite, the infinity of God. But in order to get there, it's only from number 7. Only the levels of masculine energy doesn't have that. It's only power is from 10. Only 7 is rooted in the infinite light, in the Orange Self. Like we saw, a woman can unlock infinite potential. So the real messianic experience is going to be the godliness that's going to come from earth, not from heaven. From the lower part, from Malchut, from the world. The Rebbe says, amazing, this phase in history where the influence coming from above, where we shift from influence coming from up down, and we turn everything over and we start working to unearth the influence that's coming from below, the godliness from below, happens when the previous Rebbe comes to America and takes the center of Torah to the United States, to the lower part of the world. Why did God make that happen? Because that was the intent initially, that it has to come from the bottom, not from the top. And that will explain, the Rebbe says, why once we came to America, we see an explosion of Judaism that we've never had when Jews were in Europe. When Jews were in Europe, their influence was limited. But when Jews came to America, and the Rebbe is talking particularly about his Chabad movement, we see that we received such power that now we can be everywhere in the entire world. There isn't a place in the world where you will not bump into Chabad teaching Torah, teaching mitzvot, of awakening Jews everywhere. And where are their, and what's their center? Where are they coming from? Not from some holy rabbi in Israel, but from a rabbi who's in New York, who's in Brooklyn, who's in the bottom, lifting the world up from the bottom, not from the top. This is basically a talk the Rebbe gives. It's based on this concept that 7, which is the Malchut, and that's why the previous Rebbe, who's number 6, he's the one who brings the Torah center over, because only you need number, remember we said, in order to plant a seed in the woman, it has to come from the male. So he's the one who brings the seed of holiness and godliness to the United States of America. But who is the one who actually took that seed and had it and gave birth, so to speak, gave birth, starts giving birth to this messianic infinite light. That's the seventh Rebbe. From the bottom up. Lifting the world up from the bottom. Now, when the previous Rebbe, we said, came to America, the Rebbe said, remember we explained earlier that the lower half of the hemisphere is the most difficult to change because the Torah was not given there. It's resistant. So the previous Rebbe said about America, he said that America is a frozen tundra. It's a frozen country spiritually. People in America just are apathetic. If anybody knew anything about American Jews, they were apathetic. They were just interested in making money. They were interested in the influence they were having. They were finally having influence in politics and government, this and that. And they did not want to hear about the old traditions. They didn't want to hear anything about God. They didn't want to hear anything about, they wanted, and they had the attitude that you can't, in America, you can't tell anybody what to do. See, in the old shtetls where there was some sense of authority, the rabbi had authority, the Jewish infrastructure had some authority on its people. But America is a free country. People are free. You do what you want. You have your own freedom. It's my rights. No one tells me what to do. So I heard from Rabbi Chase Taub last week. He was talking about this concept in a short video. And I just thought the story that he brought to illustrate this was huge. It was great. He said that author Herman Woke once was by the Rebbe in the 1970s, I think, or maybe in the 1980s. And he asked the Rebbe, he saw the Rebbe making the Chabad movement and spreading Judaism across the world and reaching out to all states and all cities and trying to get Jews to keep mitzvot. He said to the Rebbe, Lubavitch Rebbe, do you think you can tell American Jews to do anything? You're trying to tell American Jews? You know American Jews, they don't want to be told by anybody anything. Americans in general don't want to be told by anybody. Americans reject authority. Don't want, you know, let the government butt out of our business. I have my rights. How can you tell American Jews? So the Rebbe smiled and the Rebbe answered. You're right, he says. American Jews, you can't tell them anything, but you can teach them everything. You can't tell them anything, but you can teach them everything. Teaching is the bottom up. You're uncovering. The Rebbe came to America and just opened Jews up, bringing out from them what their godliness, their godly teach. Of course, you need teaching. You need to pour something on them, but it's all about unearthing from below, bringing out the potential from below, not dictating from above. And that's the uniqueness of the seventh generation, of the Malchut experience, from the bottom up, not from up down. 7-Eleven. When did this transition start from, So when I said earlier, the Rebbe said that America is frozen. It's ice. Now there is a teaching from the Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi, first Chabad Rebbe. Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi, now we're gonna like, from now to the end of the class, is where really the fireworks begin. There's a teaching because these the concepts that I shared with you were just the foundation concepts. So you should understand what we're saying, what I'm saying. So the Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi said that Mashiach is going to melt. He's going to have such a way with people. He's going to have a way of reaching even. He wanted to convey the idea that Mashiach is going to reach the most unreachable people. He's going to open up in the most secular, in the most spiritual resistant people, he's going to open up in them their faith. So he used the term and he said, Moshiach is going to melt the frozen ocean, the frozen sea. Yama Kerach, the sea that is frozen, he's going to melt it. And that's America. Cold, frozen. When did this whole job of changing America and transforming the world from the bottom up? We said earlier, the previous Rebbe was in Russia. And why didn't he stay in Russia? He was in the old world. He was in the old country. He was in the upper part. And he would have continued. He would have never come to America. And the Chabad influence would have been what it was then. It was limited. Again, only in America, the Rebbe says, did Chabad become global. Did the truths of the deepest parts of the Torah explode across the entire world? Only from America. Because you need the power from earth to be able to do that. But when did that happen? Because he was arrested in 1927. And the communists tried to completely destroy him. And they almost took his life. They had sentenced him to death already. And you read his memoirs, you see how many people he heard were being brutally murdered and tortured in that same dungeon where he was. To them, human life meant nothing. So for them, they could have done it in 1 second. But God didn't let them. And the Rebbe was freed, just like Joseph came out of the clutches of his own prison and became the ruler of Egypt. So the previous Rebbe then came out in 1927. I'm going to draw an interesting parallel. Just like Joseph, right before the Jewish exile began in Egypt, what happened to Joseph? They threw him into, they wanted to destroy Joseph. So you have to read deeper in every story. When you find that a person like Joseph is first they try to seduce him and cause him to sin. That's also destruction. That's even a deeper destruction. And then he's thrown into a dungeon. What does that mean spiritually? It means that the forces of darkness are threatened by him. And therefore they're doing whatever they can to put him out. So spiritually, what does that mean as well why? But why at that point? Why did they pick on Joseph right on that point? Because what threatens the unholy the most? Not when you're influencing from above. When you're drawing godly light from above, that doesn't threaten them so much. Because you're teaching your teachings and they can and whoever else wants to counter and advertise some other opposite. Just like there are holy inspiration, there can be unholy inspiration. You're going to advertise God and I'm going to advertise atheism or whatever. It's not a problem. The problem, the real threat comes when you start tinkering, you start uncovering godliness from earth itself. When you start changing, it's because, in other words, it's not like you're bringing in an influence to inspire. You're uncovering truth. And then the unholy disintegrates from itself. It implodes. It collapses on itself because there's nothing to stand on. Because you've uncovered the godliness that's within the world. You're making people organically from within themselves feel God, not because a rabbi, a teacher told them. See, that was where Joseph was holding. The next stage in Jewish history was going to be the Jews were going to be in Egypt, and the exile in Egypt, what was the point of it? Was to uncover the godliness that's in the world itself. That's why it's whenever that needs to be done, that was the exile. That was the suffering. It was because they didn't have the Torah then, so they had to do it. The only way they can do it was through, I'm not getting into it why, but it's explained that the uncovering the sparks of holiness that were in Egypt, that's the same idea that we're mentioning over here is like America. And as Egypt is considered the lowest place before the giving of the Torah. So the last generation, which was Moses' generation, they were going to do this revolutionary thing to uncover the godliness from the earth, not from heaven. But the one who was giving them the power to do that was Joseph. So right before Joseph was going to complete that task, they wanted to take him down. They wanted to destroy him. So the same thing when the previous Rebbe, when the forces of unholiness are sensing subconsciously that the previous Chabad Rebbe is about to travel across the world and is going to come to America. In other words, that's the spiritual destiny. And he's going to and put an end to all darkness. Because when you're going to uncover the godliness from the below, when he's going to pave the way for the seventh Rebbe to bring out the godliness from earth, they feel threatened. So what do they want to do? It's exactly at that point. In other words, to prevent that from happening, the Kalipas do whatever they can. That's why they almost snuffed the lights of holiness out, almost destroyed it completely. They arrested the Rebbe. They had him in their dungeons. They almost destroyed it. But he crushed them. He broke them. Just like Joseph broke the forces. And he comes... This happened in 1927. So even though he only arrived in America in 1940, But the seeds of this began already in 1927. So what happens across the country in 1927? There is a company, an ice company that sells ice, frozen ice. We're in America, Dallas, Texas. Malchut, the attribute of kingship, is called poor. The woman, the female, is called poor. She doesn't have anything of her own. The woman is poor. The man is rich. The man gives her. She's the poor one. She's the ultimate wealthy one, but it's hidden. She needs to first receive in order to be able to bring out her. So it's interesting. The city Dallas comes from the word in Hebrew, Deles, door, and Dal means poor. King David, who is the power of Mashiach, which is unearthing the godliness from below, says about himself, Dalosi, I am poor. That's Dal, that's Malchut, that's the world. Dallas, Texas. An ice company opens up, selling ice. From the ice itself becomes a convenience store. Ice, which is, nothing can grow in ice. A store that has whatever you need. Bread. They're the first ones to create this convenience store. Bread, milk, eggs, vegetables they were selling in the beginning, in the early days. What's their name? 7-Eleven. 1927 is when the 7-Eleven is born. Because the work now is to transform from 7-Eleven. That means that the number 7, the Malchut, is going to reach number 11. And it's going to explode godliness from below. And this energy is going to be limitless and infinite. So take a look at the magnificent thing. Their name was Southland Ice Company. But they didn't start calling it 7-Eleven until 1946. That's when their name, they're known by today, 7-Eleven, because their stores were open from 7-Eleven, as I told you earlier. 1946 is 5 years after the Rebbe. The previous Rebbe came to America in 1940. His son-in-law came to America in 1941. And he was appointed by his father-in-law to run much of the activity of establishing Chabad in America in 1941. In the ice, frozen America. In 1945, I think it was, or in 1946, the previous Rebbe spoke and he said, I am here already 5 years and I can see that the ice of America is beginning to melt. I find that the spiritual, the indifference, the coldness is beginning to melt. I'm beginning to see people are beginning to hear, are warming up to godliness. They're beginning to experience the Hashem, God, the holiness of that's here is beginning to show. So in 1946, 7-Eleven gets the name 7-Eleven. In other words, the power of number 7 is already starting to be visible. First, it's just Southern Ice Company. All it is ice. When the Rebbe came to America, this place was ice. But now we're hearing already 7-Eleven. We're seeing the effects of Malchus. The 11th power of Ein Sof, of the infinity, is beginning to show itself. And how does it show itself? Number one, it's the first store that is open 24/7. So let's understand the depth of that for a moment. What does it mean? What is the greatness about that? Just like in everything, there is male and female. In time, there is also male and female. Daytime is male time. Nighttime is female time. That's why the sun is male is during the day. The moon is female is night. So daytime is male time. Nighttime is female time. So conventionally, as it's been all the years, if you wanted food, what is food? Food is life. It's sustenance. The recipient doesn't have. The world doesn't have. The recipient doesn't have. You have to go to the influencer. In other words, who gives food? God is the one who gives food. We say it in prayer. We say it in our in the grace after meals. Hazanesa olam kula. God is the one that bestows. All influence is coming from God. All life is coming from Him. It's coming from higher, from above the world, from heaven. Heaven is giving life to the earth. Everything is being given from above. That's why stores were only open during the day, not at night. The concept of having a store open 24/7, day and night, means that nighttime is also producing. Nighttime provides food and sustenance. To get your eggs and get your milk and get your whatever it is, you don't, or whatever, I don't know, Q-tips if you need. You know, it's not only by day. You can have, it's available all the time. That means it's similar to the concept that the lower hemisphere is also giving life, not just from above. It's coming from below. I thought it's a 24/7. But also, there's another idea of 24/7. 24/7 means that the provider is providing infinitely. There's no limit. No limit. That means spiritual. Who's the provider spiritually? A rabbi, a teacher. So teachers usually, you know, you have a time when your shop is open, time when your shop is closed. If you come to the rabbi at the time when his shop is closed, come back tomorrow. I'm closed now. I'm not open now. Anybody knows anything about the seventh Rebbe, the Chabad Rebbe, the seventh Rebbe? When he appoints his shluchim, his emissaries, they are supposed to be 24/7, seven shops. Not even 24/6, 24/7, including Shabbos. Shabbos very much. A Chabad rabbi, if he's really tuning into the Rebbe's energy, never closes shop. You're open 24/7. What does that mean? The Rebbe wants his providers, his chassidim. And again, when I say the Rebbe, his everybody, whoever is signing up to his teachings, whoever is getting turned on by his energy, by his thing, becomes invigorated with an energy that calls for a limitless commitment. Your store is open 24/7. 7-Eleven calls for, doesn't have limited hours. Even though initially it was 7-Eleven, was the hours from 7-Eleven, but once it's named 7-Eleven, it forced itself to be open 24/7 because 11 means limitless. No end. There's no, it's not limit. It's not limited. So, what did we say when I told you the story? How did it happen? It didn't happen because they decided they want to give money. They want to make more money. The store was looking to make more business. Let's try opening our store 7-Eleven. That's not what happened. It was because there were customers, there were students who kept the store open. They weren't leaving, and because the customers were demanding, that's why you give. If anybody knows anything about the Rebbe's teachings, is that the Rebbe doesn't want Chassidim and his people to give because they should become somebody. To give because you want to give. You give because others need. Doesn't make a difference. It's not about you. It's about the recipient. It's about the customer. It's about the people that need. A lot of times you have someone who's giving, and the reason they're giving and sharing and teaching and inspiring is because they want to give and they want to share, and it gives them something. That's not number seven. That's related more to the energy of number six. Seven, the idea of Malchus is total bittul, total nullification. And it's not about self at all. The commitment is an infinite commitment. 24/7. If you're needed, you're not seeking to have your story. And that's why you see from the story that it reflects very much the Rebbe's entire energy, is that he worked his teaching to everybody that it inspires is this idea. Is first of all, there's no limit. It's not like you've done enough. You've never done enough. And your commitment has to be. I think there was once a Chabad house who bought the Rebbe his key. And he said, "The Rebbe, you're the boss." And the Rebbe said, "If I'm the boss, you have to be open 24/7. You can't lock your doors. The door has to be available. For a person who's coming, it has to be all the time. There's no now we're off. 24/7. So the concept that there was food at night, not just daytime. And again, this became a world concept everywhere. Markets that are open. But there's another point. They were the first ones to make convenience stores. What are convenience stores? Convenience store, convenience shop means instead of having to go far over, like I said earlier, because they were selling ice, and ice you have to buy in a local place. You don't have to go to the city, to the market to buy. You buy it in your local place. So they already were selling everything else, and they opened up the concept of a convenience store. So what does it mean spiritually, a convenience store? Convenience store is a Chabad house. See, there are Chabad houses in every little town. On all the places, there are these outposts of never in the Jewish world where there's something like this, that there was a representative available to feed anybody who's searching for spirituality and holiness and connection and divine connection. And the Rebbe said that we have to be available not just for Jews, but for non-Jews as well. Teach the seven Noahide laws. A Chabad house, what is it? Unlike the way it was in the past, where if you wanted to grow in Judaism, you had to travel to a community where there were a lot of Jews, where there was a yeshiva, where there was a great rabbi, where there was a great scholar, where there was a great center. It's like you're having to go to the big city where the market was. And there you can get your basic needs. The Rebbe is teaching us, 7-Eleven came and taught, that no, there's a convenience store in all the rural areas. Anywhere you want, you pull up, you fill up with what you need. If there's a hungry Jew somewhere who needs, and he can't afford to go to Israel to yeshiva. He can't afford to travel to New York and stay there for a few months. Can't afford to uproot his family and move to a big Torah center. He's interested. He wants to. Guess what? You got your local Chabad. It's just around the corner. 7-Eleven. Only 7-Eleven came up with the convenience store. And in all Judaism of all the years, there was never someone who set up a system where there is a convenient store for spirituality everywhere. 7-Eleven, 24/7 convenience store coming from what? And what's their signature drink that everybody is? Slurpees. What's Slurpees? The ice turns into slush. Which means the iciness of the world, of the cold recipient, the lowest part of the world, the most, and yet from it becomes a refreshing crushed ice. It's no more hard and resistant. Slurpees. The Rebbe invented Slurpees. The crushed ice. Unbelievable. Let's take it further. What else do they bring to the world? Coffee on the go. What's coffee on the go? Coffee on the go is that, you know, you're tired. What does coffee do? It wakes you up. It gives you a quick shot of caffeine and it wakes you up. So it used to be you had to settle into a store, into a cafe and have a waiter that serves you and brings you the coffee and so on and so forth. 7-Eleven, a new idea. You can run in. And again, this is everywhere. There's no one who's not influenced by 7-Eleven because everybody else has coffee on the go. A paper cup, a hot cup, you get your coffee and you go. They even have Starbucks drive-through. Get your coffee and continue. You don't even have to get out of your car. So spiritually, what does that mean? What did the Rebbe set up? The Rebbe set up mitzvah campaigns. What is a mitzvah campaign? That in order to get your spiritual high, you don't have to go to a shul, to a synagogue and join the minyan and daven. Wherever you are, you can grab a Jew and do a mitzvah, roll up the sleeve instantly. They do a quick mitzvah. You've turned their soul on. You've given them a cup of coffee. What does a coffee do? It wakes you up. It wakes up the Judaism. It wakes up the Jew. It enlivens him. It inspires. There's a quick, but it's a quick thing like this. It's not a whole sit down experience. It's not a sitting down at a restaurant. You take and go. What else is 7-Eleven responsible for? As we said earlier, fill up your soda on your own. Self-serve. That's the whole idea of number 7. Number 7 represents the idea that you don't need an influencer. Of course, it's good to have a teacher to study and to learn, but you can discover godliness from within yourself. The whole point of number 7 is to bring out the godliness, to be self-sufficient. To discover the godliness that in the days of Mashiach, it says no one will teach anybody because everybody will know me from within themselves. Today's days, we are responsible to study, to search for ourselves. First of all, alone, everybody can search on the internet. You can find so much on your own. It used to be that you needed a teacher. You needed, today you can do your own study, your own learning. It's all available. That's the concept of self-serve. Again, 7-Eleven, the first ones. Help yourself. Go to the soda machine. Fill yourself up a cup of soda. It's amazing. It's all the idea of 7-Eleven. Why? Because it's the work from below. That's number seven. Finally, what else did 7-Eleven give us? Big gulp. A big gulp means such a big, how is one person going to drink that? A big gulp. Who needs such a big cup? And their point that they want to give is like, huge. You can have such a big cup. Number seven pours into a cup. Number 11. 11 is infinity. Seven is able, bring means it comes into the vessels. Seven is the number of the vessels. 11 is the energy. The fusion of infinite energy in a vessel. That's the big gulp. 7-Eleven gives us the ability to gulp big. Even if we're tiny, the energy that's now available, messianic energy, is infinite energy. It's infinite. Each and every one of us is able to receive infinite inspiration, infinite light, infinite connection, infinite blessings. Everything is boundless. We just have to open up our mouth and be ready to gulp it in. Unbelievable. So everybody, if you still have time on 7-Eleven, run to your local 7-Eleven, grab yourself a Slurpee or a Big Gulp, whatever works best for you. The Slurpees you'll get for free. And let us merit that the power represents number 7-Eleven. The power of the Malchut should be revealed in the entire world. Let the energy of number 11 finally reveal itself. Let us see the highest and deepest and greatest godly revelation. Let us see Mashiach. And let us see that all now.